Hey guys, Matt Gurney here. This is the latest episode of our newest podcast, On the Line. We're still slow launching this. Give us a couple of weeks. We'll get there. Very excited and proud today to have General Wayne Ayer, Chief of the Defense Staff for the Canadian Armed Forces, as our guest. Lots to talk about with him. The state of the world, the latest defense update offered by the Prime Minister last week, and probably a few other things as well. So stick around for my conversation with General Wayne Ayer of the Canadian Armed Forces. This is On the Line. Thanks for listening. General, thank you for making some time for me today. Great to talk with you. And I know your time's at a premium, so if you don't mind, we'll jump right into it. There was a big defense policy update, just came out a couple of days ago, and I want to get your thoughts on that. But something I've noticed that you have done in your time as Chief of the Defense Staff, and even before that, when you were the commander of the Canadian Army and when you were the interim Chief of the Defense Staff, you've spoken bracingly, I would say, compared to others in your role previously about the threats facing Canada. And I will not turn you into a political pundit, but we have a Foreign Interference Commission now happening now. We have NATO summits. We have wars in Europe. We have wars in the Middle East. The threat environment for Canada is lousy. And it's amazing to me how much in my daily job I'm talking about the threat environment. What's your assessment of the state of the world today? We'll talk about the defense update in a minute, but what are we preparing for?
Hey, thanks, Matt. And appreciate the opportunity to sit down and talk with you about this. Hey, the world is not getting any safer. And what we're seeing out there is a confluence of some pretty significant stressors in the security environment, any one of which would be cause for concern. But if we take a look at geopolitically, you know, what's happening with war in Europe and Russia's disregard for sovereignty and the norms of international behavior and doing away with some of the norms that have kept us safe since the end of the Second World War. We see war in the Middle East that is spurred on by Iran and many of their malign, malevolent activities. Tensions in the Western Pacific with China, Taiwan. We see interference happening around the world geopolitically. We're seeing an increased alignment between countries like Russia, like China, especially the most concern to us in the Arctic. Iran, North Korea as well, aligning more and more in their activities and their support. So the geopolitical world is as fraught as it's been since the end of the Second World War. But layer climate change on that as a driver of insecurity, instability around the world, but also here at home, increased frequency and intensity of natural disasters, but opening up the Arctic as well. And so with increased access comes increased interest. With increased interest, much greater opportunities for tension, miscalculation, and the like. And in particular, we're seeing greater cooperation between China and Russia in the Arctic, which has traditionally been a wedge issue for them. And then you see the rapidly changing technology, which is driving a change in the character of war, how wars are fought. You know, the nature of war isn't changing. You know, it's still a contest of human will. It's still characterized by human emotion, fog, friction, chance. They're still bloody, but how they're being fought is rapidly changing. And then social change. We've probably seen more change in this society, our own society, in the last 10 years than we have for the last 50. But you combine all of those, and hey, this isn't the unipolar moment of 1990 to 2020 where most of us gained our professional experience. No, this is the return of history, and things are much, much more dangerous. Everything that I'm talking about is related to what I see as our vital national security interest, which is the continued prosperity of this country. The prosperity of our country is predicated on stability and certainty in the international order. And that is being greatly impacted. And so you think we got financial problems now. If we cannot deter that instability, that adventurism, expansionism, imperialism by some of these other powers, collectively deter it, yeah, you haven't seen anything yet. And so as we turn to the policy update, this is an ounce of prevention. I am very happy to see that those risks that I just articulated find a home in the front end of this policy update. You know, calling it the way it is, but in terms of what it means for Canada, and especially in terms of the Arctic.
You first really came on my radar in, I mean, I had heard of your announcement and I had seen press conferences you'd given, and this was before 2020, but I've told you this before, and I'll share this with the listeners now. There was an interview you had given to the Canadian press, and I believe you had mentioned to me, you'd actually done it a little bit before, but they released it in early January 2020. And as an old newspaper guy, that makes sense to me. You do a bunch of interesting interviews and you kind of trickle them out when people are on holiday and taking vacations and things. And you had specifically warned, at the time you were the commander of the Canadian Army, and you had warned that the pace of domestic operations, mostly disaster relief efforts in Canada, were exhausting both the regular force and the reserves. And you guys couldn't do things like have training exercises and, you know, repair equipment and even just give troops time with their families, like to keep morale up. And I've often thought of that interview because I know you had done it a little bit before, but the timing of it was incredible because it was early January 2020, and we were all such sweet summer children then, like just like everything that's happened in the 4 years since. And I think back to what you said, one of the issues, General, that I think jumps out when I was looking at the defense policy update, I want to talk about on a couple of levels. But one of the issues is personnel and an aggressive push to recruit. What is, and I don't want you to reveal anything secret, obviously, but one of the things that is being reported in the press is that personnel retention and recruitment has been an issue to the forces here. How do we reverse that here in a job market with a lot of labor shortages? I know a guy who owns a Boston Pizza. He can't hire people to be waiters. How do the armed forces compete in that kind of environment where we are facing, for demographic reasons, a bit of a labor shortage?
Matt, that's a question I've been wrestling with for most of my tenure as the Chief of Defense Staff. And there's a number of aspects to that. You know, we started a program called Reconstitution. It's all about rebuilding the personnel strength of the Canadian Armed Forces. And I was briefed last week on where we stand. And I'm happy to report that as opposed to the last three fiscal years of shrinking in the Canadian Armed Forces, this last fiscal year, we're actually growing. And so I'm cautiously optimistic. You know, based on, and these aren't final numbers yet, but based on end February, early March data, we are on track to grow the regular force by a couple hundred, and our reserve force has grown by several hundred. We are entering this fiscal year with more individuals in the recruiting pipeline that have either accepted an offer or about to be given an offer than we have for the last 3 years. So that is excellent news. You know, February, the month of February had the highest number of applicants per month on record in the last 5 years. Our attrition rate this last year, and again, it's based on end February data, attrition rate is 7.0%. Our average before the pandemic was 7.2%. This is excellent when compared to our allies. Now, it's not homogeneous. It's not the same across the board. There is unhealthy attrition in certain trades, certain rank levels, but I'm cautiously optimistic. We spent a good hour plus with our minister this morning going through recruiting and retention initiatives and where we need to continue to drive this. And in fact, we are leading the way with the Canadian government on things like breaking the code for security clearances for permanent residents. This isn't a military problem. This is a Government of Canada problem, Government of Canada policy. And we're working through that. How can we rapidly accelerate that? How can we streamline the process? And to be absolutely clear, we are not sacrificing standards. We still need a high standard. But we need to understand what those standards are and what risks we are taking and have a real data-driven, risk-informed decision-making. But I'm cautiously optimistic on the people because this is super important. Let me go back to the policy for a second. And I want to talk about the success of this policy and what it's predicated on. You know, in my view, the success of this policy is going to be predicated on three things. One, a sense of urgency in the implementation as quickly as we can. Two, taking those capabilities that are committed to but unfunded and getting them into the fiscal framework because they are absolutely required. And three, getting the additional personnel that are required. There's the hooks in the policy for it. But the planning factor that we've used for all of these capabilities is an additional 14,500 into the regular force. And you've seen the discussion of that. You've seen our minister talk publicly about that. That's what we're using as we design the Canadian Armed Forces for the next decade. That's the figure we're using. So we need to get to our current authorized strength first and then grow beyond that as quickly as possible. Let me talk about the policy for a second. And some of the stuff that we are very happy to see in it. Because from a strategic framework perspective, the threat-based analysis that we have done finds a home in there. And what do I mean by that? Well, the themes of foundational readiness and deterrence run throughout the document. If we take a look at the pillars, fixing right at the front end, fixing readiness. So the people, equipment, training, and sustainment. Getting that right before we get nice, bright, shiny objects, incredibly important. And you've heard me talk about that before. And so the investments in, you know, and discussion on things like people, the serviceability, the maintenance of our equipment. So the National Procurement Funds, incredibly important. Infrastructure, ammunition, that is the base. That is the foundation that needs to be fixed. And so it's good we got that. Secondly, the geographic focus. For far too long, we have been all things to all people. And given the threat environment, given that we have to be able to focus where we go, and the increased threat to Canada's north and the continent, us having as a primary geographic focus area, the Arctic and the continent, not only makes sense for us as a country, but is something that is welcomed by our allies. You know, the Arctic was viewed as an area of vulnerability by our American allies, and so they are happy. This is NATO's northern flank. And as we, with 7 of the 8 Arctic countries now part of NATO, this is making a lot of sense. And we're dealing with a globally integrated threat environment. So what happens in one part of the world is integrated to other parts. So it is inconceivable that a large-scale war with NATO in Europe would be confined to Europe. And so that aspect is important. You know, the rest of the world, it doesn't mean no effort, but we are privileging and will privilege where we what the activities we conduct in the other parts of the world. The procurement reform, absolutely essential. And so this speaks to that sense of urgency in getting stuff done. The R&D and the defense innovation piece, absolutely essential as well. And it goes back to that threat of the rapidly accelerating technology. This is strategically, this is how we stay ahead. And then the return every 5 years or every 4 years for an update instead of these ad hoc updates, because the world is changing so fast. That makes a lot of sense. And the other thing we were super happy to see in there is a national security strategy and call for that, because the defense policy, defense strategy is one aspect of national security, and it should be done under the umbrella of a wider strategy that brings all of the aspects of national security together. The capabilities that you see in there, both the costed, funded, and the committed to, very important as well. And we need to accelerate those where we can. You've got capabilities that focus on the Arctic, which is excellent. The infrastructure that's required through the Northern Operational Support Hubs, the domain awareness, the satellite capabilities, et cetera. The long-range precision strike capability for the Army, absolutely essential as we see the character of war change with the precision strike revolution. The investment in strategic stockpiles of ammunition, much needed. You know, the stand up of Canadian Armed Forces Cyber Command as that domain of warfare becomes more important. And so the strategic frame, to go back to that, I think we've got it right. But operating in that strategic frame with those three imperatives that I talk about, essential.
You mentioned ammunition, and it's something my colleague Jen and I have joked that as a side gig, we're going to start hand manufacturing 155 shells because we think we'd get a pretty good price for them on the market right now. It's incredible to me because you mentioned like the most challenging strategic environment since the Second World War. I have always tried to explain this to people. Too much of our concept of war is locked in on Rosie the Riveter, which is, oh, we're at war, so we're going to get all the people or we're going to send them to the car manufacturing plant and we're going to build tanks now. That stuff doesn't exist anymore. And like, there's long lead times on this stuff. You mentioned a minute ago, the reviews every 4 years. How important is that going to be to building up almost not just emphasis and focus, but also expertise within government, right? Because so often for Canadian Armed Forces, especially with equipment, but I guess also with doctrines, when we're only reviewing them every 10, 20 years, or we're only replacing kit every 30 or 40 years, all the guys who did it last time are gone. They're retired. We haven't had that key expertise here. So I asked you when I was reading the defense policy update, one of the things I want to ask you about was ammunition, and you've covered it. I wanted to ask you about personnel, but I also wanted to talk with you almost about expertise. How are we going to build up almost a habit of thinking in this country so that guys like you and me and a few other weirdos don't have to go to explain to Canadians that we actually live in a world that has bad people in it?
So Matt, if I understand your question correctly, you just called me a weirdo.
No, but with only, no, yes, but in an inclusive way. Like I was including you with me in that.
Yeah, I'm just giving you a hard time.
You're a weirdo.
Hey, this is one of the things that that concerns me is the intellectual depth we have in this country about national security issues. Yeah, we got a number of great academics who study it, mm-hmm. But the number and depth of our think tanks that think about all things security, and even wider as we think about deterrence theory in the 21st century. What does nuclear deterrence look like in this multipolar world? Hey, where are the where's the Brodies and the like of the 21st century? You know, those that thought through nuclear deterrence theory in the Cold War, because we're in a multipolar world, many with nuclear arms, it's much more complicated. And so this is a bit of a sidebar to your question. Internally, and the other thing that was in this policy was an upfront investment in civilian capacity to build out our procurement expertise. Yeah. I don't think it's all about people. I don't think it's all about getting the right people. I think it's about cutting process as well. And eliminating what I'm calling more and more harmful bureaucracy, because that will be the biggest obstacle for the implementation of this policy, or one of the biggest obstacles is that harmful bureaucracy that will slow us down. And so we need to be able to execute an 80% solution with 80% of the information, and just get after it. That means a different understanding of risk.
And I think it speaks a little to what I was saying, General, a minute ago about the idea of like a habit of thinking, right? Because that harmful bureaucracy is what happens when you don't have a habit of thinking of what if we need our next weapon system in 3 years instead of 15 years and five budget cycles from now.
Yeah. Well, it speaks to a 1939 or a 1914 mentality. And how did we do it then? We need to continue to think about that. It's all about choices. I was in Borden last week, and it was for the 100th anniversary of the Air Force, and we were briefed at the RCAF annex of the new museum. And in 1916, with 4 months, they built a runway, built accommodations, built hangars, by the which are still standing, mm-hmm. and started air crew training. That took will. And so that's the new standard I'm anchored on.
All right, we'll go for the Borden standard from 1916. On the defense update, you've spoken of urgency, and it's something, and God knows I've done this before. I have held this government and previous governments to task for not having a sense of urgency. What about your own internal processes? And I'm not saying this to point a finger here, but you and I have spoken before about how difficult it is to get a would-be soldier or airman or sailor into the armed forces because of some of that harmful bureaucracy there. The defense policy update is going to set up the military, I think, hopefully, if it's fully executed, if we execute it urgently, it'll put you guys in a big position. What are some of the internal reform efforts you guys have been doing as well? Because the policy expert is kind of external to you guys. You had spoken about retention numbers improving. You had talked about attrition numbers dropping, the force levels going up here. And these issues to me are related because when you have a defense policy update, when you have people talking about it, you hopefully get some of those think tanks, you have big kit procurement items coming in that probably helps you get young people interested in that job in the armed forces. Are you going to be able to get them in a reasonable time?
Well, we just talked about some of the work that's being done to streamline the recruiting system, you know, whether it is
Security clearances and things like that. Yeah.
Security clearances, probationary period for security clearances. Taking the process online so that applicants don't need to go in to a physical recruiting center. They can pick up their phone and go through the recruiting process that way and then follow their progress online, but also have recruiters follow the progress and engage with them throughout the progress or process to ensure that they continue to be engaged. There's continually a human face at the other side, somebody continuing to encourage them to go through the process. Looking at how we do medical screening is incredibly important as well, because that's one of the impediments. And so there's not one single silver bullet here, but a whole bunch of these other changes that we're bringing in.
When we started talking a few minutes ago, at the very outset, I had asked you to recap, and you've done this so many times in private and public, where you've described the changing world Canadians live in, or at least the world we're realizing we've always lived in. I guess we can quibble about that. You've also spoken about the urgency of taking this defense policy update and making sure we provide the money, the resources, and I would also say the bureaucratic and political attention to get it done. What do you think Canadians need to know about this defense policy update and how it fits into the world there? Urgency can apply to you and your successor and the people under your command. It can apply to the government. But for the Canadian public, what urgency should they feel? What do they need to understand about the work you're doing?
Well, I think they need to understand that their future prosperity, their willingness or their ability to be able to thrive economically is predicated again on that stability and certainty in the international environment. And so we're in an environment now where the international currency is force. Hard power matters. And your ability to influence activities around the world is based on what you bring to the table in terms of hard power, whether it's diplomacy, whether it's our ability to shape how that international order emerges. And so much of this is tied together. Think of this as investment in an ounce of prevention.
Yeah.
Because the cure is far more expensive if we don't do this. And so in the document, in the minister's opening comments, it talks about the primary role of government being able to defend its country, defend the country it's responsible for. That goes back to the dawn of history when human communities were formed. Well, again, we're in the return of history, and the ability to defend our own country, to protect our own sovereignty, incredibly important. Hey, our sovereignty is not a given. Now, again, going back to the northern focus, the Arctic focus in this document, there is no threat to Canadian sovereignty today, tomorrow, next week, or next decade. But think ahead, 30, 40 years, decades into the future, where the Arctic is much more accessible. And if we don't have the capability, if we don't have the presence to enforce our own sovereignty, especially given the incredibly low population density up there, our sovereignty is not a given. But to tie it back to current situation, and we see the norms of international sovereignty being grossly violated by Russia and Ukraine. So if those norms of international borders and the sanctity of a people's ability to exist go away, it's a very, very slippery slope. with potentially direct implications for our own country in the half century ahead. And we got to be thinking in those time frames if we're truly thinking strategically.
You know, I've always said that they wouldn't dare is not a good defense policy. Like, we actually have to think through some of the scenarios where, yes, in fact, they may dare. General,
yeah, I said that before 9/11.
I remember waking up that morning and thinking the biggest challenge I was going to have that day was being late for school because I'd slept in, and we all got a wake-up call real quick. General, I have used up the time you have available, but I will impishly ask you one more question, and you can take it where you want to. Anything you wish to leave the listeners with, or my readers, anything we didn't get a chance to cover today? Like, the defense policy update was huge. You've been generous with your time. Is there anything you wish we'd had a chance to talk about?
Hey, this is the first step of many for making this organization the organization Canada needs for the future. This is a great organization. Every time I get out and meet with our members, meet with our soldiers, sailors, aviators, operators, I am inspired. And so as we look to the future with young Canadians looking for something to do with their life, looking for purpose, there is no greater purpose than serving your country. And, you know, as I enter the twilight of my own career, you know, as I see what's coming with what's in place with this policy, plus what will come after this policy, I would do it all over again. It's going to be a challenge. Our country and the world is going to be facing all sorts of challenges, but this is an organization that is setting itself up to go forth and do great things. So there's my recruiting pitch for you.
Well, just make sure they tuck that into the fine print of the update then. We'll get that in writing. General, you've got to run. Thank you very much for your time. You've mentioned the twilight of your career. You've already announced your retirement. I hope you and I have a chance to speak again before that, but if not after. Thank you again, and good luck to you, and thank you to all the men and women under your command for all the work that they do.
No, thanks, Matt. Thanks for the opportunity to speak, and you know, I look forward to seeing you face-to-face.
Look forward to that. That was General Wayne Eyre, Chief of the Defense Staff for the Canadian Armed Forces, in conversation with me on the latest episode of On the Line, the line's newest podcast. We're soft launching this now. Give us a couple of weeks. We're getting a title card for it. We're getting the music for it. This will be a fully going concern by next month at the latest. In the meantime, thanks for your time. Thank you for listening. We hope you enjoyed my conversation with General Wayne Eyre. As we always say in our podcasts, like and subscribe. Read more from us at readtheline.ca. Have an amazing day. Thanks for listening.